ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31. Narada instructs the Prachetas, Text 13. Shreyasam api sarvesham Atma yavadhir arthata Sarvesham api bhutanam Harir Atmatmada Priya. Shreyasam. Of auspicious activities. Api. Certainly. Sarvesham. All. Atma. The self. He. Certainly. Avadhi. Destination. Arthata, factually, sarvesham, of all, api, certainly, bhutanam, living entities, hari, the supreme personality of Godhead, atma, the supersoul, atmada, one who can give us our original identity, Priya, very dear. Translation and purport by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Factually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original source of all self-realization. Consequently, the goal of all auspicious activities, karma, jnana, yoga and bhakti, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. Factually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original source of all self-realization. Consequently, the goal of all auspicious activities, karma, jnana, yoga and bhakti, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. The living entity is the marginal energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the material world is the external energy. Under the circumstances, one must understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is factually the original source of both matter and spirit. This is explained in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 7:4-5. Pumirapolanovayu kammano buddhirevacha Ahankara iti yamme pinna prakriti rashtada Apareyam mitastvanyam prakritim vidhime param Jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. All together, these eight comprise my separated material energies. But besides this inferior energy, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mine, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with the material nature and are sustaining the universe. The entire cosmic manifestation is but a combination of matter and spirit. The spiritual part is a living entity, and these living entities are described as prakriti, or energy. The living entity is never described as Purusha, the Supreme Person. Therefore, to identify the living entity with the Supreme Lord is simply ignorance. The living entity is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord, although there is factually no difference between the energy and the energetic. The duty of the living entity is to understand his real identity. When he does, Krishna gives him all the facilities to come to the platform of devotional service. That is the perfection of life. This is indicated in the Vedic Upanishad. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas. Tasyaisha atma vivrinute tanum svam. Lord Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Desham satatayuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. The conclusion is that one must come to the platform of bhakti yoga. Even though one may begin with karma yoga, jnana yoga, or ashtanga yoga, unless one comes to the platform of bhakti yoga, self-realization or realization of the absolute truth cannot be achieved.
Om jnanam timarandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun melitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shreyasam api sarvesham atya hyavadhirarthada sarvesham api bhutanam harir atmat madapriya.
So first I'd like to beg for the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas present, who are very merciful, and hopefully I can say something useful today. Today also is a very important day. It's the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri. So we'll discuss the text for about 10-15 minutes, and then after that we'll read something about Madhavendra Puri's disappearance. So this way we will try to do both. So in this verse, the first point Narad Muni is making to the Prachetas is that Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the source of both material and spiritual worlds. He is the source of both matter and spirit. So oftentimes, at least for myself, I used to think that Krishna is the source of spirit. You know, Krishna's spiritual, he's a source of spirit, but maybe not of matter. You know, matter seems to fallen, you could say. It seems as though matter is something too material to be connected in any way with Krishna. But here, Prabhupada is specifically saying that Krishna is the source of both matter and spirit. So, in our philosophy, this brings up a very nice point. That actually, it's not that the material world, or matter, you could say, it's not that matter, the material energy, is intrinsically bad. Nothing is bad, because everything is ultimately, it's emanating from the Supreme Lord. Matter, our meditation always should be, and we're told to be, that we're not these bodies, we're not this world of matter, we're the spirit soul. So matter can be a great trap for us. It can entrap the soul into bondage, into ignorance. It's an easy trap for the soul to fall into. But matter in itself is not bad. Matter itself is also in some way spiritual. Matter is also Brahman. So we say sarva kalam idam Brahman. That everything that we look around us, this chair, this table, the doors, everything is all Brahman. It's all the Lord's energy. It's all of that same, it's coming from Krishna, and it's coming from, and so therefore it's all Brahman. So matter is, in that way, it's actually spiritual. Then what is bad then? What is the problem then? What is Maya? So Srila Prabhupada and the Srimad Bhagavatam also, in terms of the way it uses the word, it uses it in many different ways. But one of the ways Prabhupada, again and again, he says that Maya actually is simply exists in the mind, he says. in some places he writes like this. He says, Maya is when we see something to be separate from the Lord. And that's when it's bad. So if we see any material object to be separate from the Lord, then it becomes Maya. Then it becomes the problem, you could say. The bad thing, the problem. But when it's engaged in the service of the Lord, when it's seen in connection with the Lord, then it's spiritual. So like Srila Prabhupada, again and again, he gave this example of the microphone. He said that if I use this microphone in the service of the Lord, it's no longer material, but it's spiritual. But now, does that mean when Srila Prabhupada says that, that now suddenly the microphone that Srila Prabhupada was using became, you know, a living entity like us, or became, you know, eternal, so it wouldn't be destroyed at any time. It wouldn't be, you know, it couldn't be crushed to pieces. It cannot be burned by fire. No, it still retains, you could say, the quality of matter, but it's spiritual. It's fully spiritual because the connection between that and Krishna has been seen. So therefore, it's fully spiritual. But before, when I was seeing it as separate from Krishna, therefore it was material. So the devotee, the bhakti yogi can see variety. So Krishna can have two different energies. One is the material energy and the spiritual energy. And they can actually be different. It's not that they're exactly the same, in that way exactly the same. No, there is variety. But the devotee doesn't see duality. He sees that everything is the energy of the Lord. Everything is Krishna's, and therefore it is Krishna's energy. Whereas the impersonalists, they don't see variety. They say everything is one. No variety, no nothing. All this is variety. But actually, they see duality. They're actually the dualists. Even though they say that we're dualists and they're monists, but actually they're the dualists. Because they say there's two things. There's Brahman and there's Maya. And this Maya, has nothing to do with Brahman. And of course, the way they get around it, the way they say is that, well, this thing is neither real nor unreal. So therefore, Maya has really no real substance to it. And so therefore, it doesn't exist, and therefore only Brahman exists. But we don't accept that. We say, well, either something exists or it doesn't exist. We have to make a choice. So if it is an object of experience, if you're talking about Maya, then therefore Maya must exist. So therefore, you're talking about two things. You're saying one thing is Brahman, and when there's no Brahman, or separate from Brahman, is this thing called Maya. But what we say is that no, actually, in fact, there's only one thing. There's only Brahman. There's only Krishna. And Maya is Krishna's energy. It's his own power. Just like my own power, the power by which I'm speaking, is part of me. It's one and different. It's non-different than me. So therefore, we're actually the monists, because we actually see Maya in relationship to Krishna. We actually see that this Maya isn't false. The world isn't unreal. It is real, but it's all the energy of the Lord. So, for example, if we ask a Mayavadi, if we say, you know, what is this, this chair or something, or this table, then the Mayavadi won't say that this is Brahman. It'll say it's illusion, it's unreal. Because any variety, anything's of names and forms, not anything that has a name or a form, is Maya. That's the definition of Maya. But if you ask a devotee what this is, then he'll say, no, this is Brahman. This is Krishna's energy. This is connected with the Lord. And that's why there's one purport in the Gita with Srila Prabhupada. He makes this point. He says that you know, everything is Krishna. This everything that we see around is Krishna. So our philosophy is Bheda and Abheda, or difference and non-difference. And initially, what we have to work on, many times you see the Bhagavatam in its verses, it almost seems like it's speaking Mayavad philosophy. Because initially, we have to focus on the Abheda. Because right now we're seeing everything different. We're seeing, no, this is different from Krishna. This has nothing to do with Krishna. That has nothing to do with Krishna. My enjoyment has nothing to do with Krishna. So our problem is actually difference. So first we have to, in some ways, work on the abheda. That we see, no, everything is connected with Krishna. Whatever I enjoy in this world, I'm actually enjoying Krishna. That's Krishna's potency that's giving me pleasure. So therefore, how much pleasure will it be if I directly come in contact with Krishna? I myself, I'm also Krishna's part and parcel. And therefore, Krishna is most dear to me. Because Krishna is my true self. Krishna is the inner self, the supreme self. So we have to focus on the abheda, the oneness. And then once we realize the oneness, then we say, oh no, with this oneness, there's also bheda. There's also difference. And that's the variety. That's the, no, that actually everything is one. Because in essence, everything is the Lord. Everything is the Lord's energy. In essence, everything is Krishna. But there's also difference. That's us as individuals, us as being different. So, Maya can refer also simply to the Lord's power. So the most general way in which Maya is translated, this term, is as the Lord's power. So in many places in the Bhagavatam we'll find where Vyasadeva is writing that Krishna appears by his Maya. He appears in this world by his Maya. Or he assumed the form of a small child by his Maya. So we might read this and we might think, well, what is this? By his elusive power, by his mystical power. And if you see Srila Prabhupada's translation, Srila Prabhupada very clearly just translates it as, this is the transcendental energy of the Lord. He appears by his own transcendental energy. Now it might seem to someone that, oh, this is, you know, Srila Prabhupada's interpretation, or this is a Gaudiya Vaishnava interpretation, that, you know, he's taken that word Maya and he's translated as a transcendental power of the Lord. But really, you know, it means illusion. No, actually, if we read the scriptures and all the way from the Upanishads to the Puranas, the word Maya is just referred to as power. It's energy. That's what Maya means. One aspect of Maya can be the material power or the elusive power. You could say the energy of the Lord that puts us into illusion. But Maya itself is not illusion. It can put us into a misconception. But Maya itself is simply the power of the Lord. It was actually Shankaracharya who came later on, and he twisted the meaning of just this one word, where he said Maya means unreality or it means illusion. But that was that's sort of his translation of the word. The word itself, Maya, simply means the power of the Lord. So Krishna's form is manifested by his power, because or you could say his power is emanating from his form. So his form is we say Svarupa Shakti. The power of Krishna's form is Svarupa. So it's also one of Krishna's power. But the point is, it's non-different from him. It's his eternal power. In the same way, all of these are different powers of the Lord. And then only one of these powers is his material energy. Just a small manifestation. And that material energy is illusory energy, which is Maya, which is our misconception of seeing. It's the energy itself is real, but it puts us into illusion, which is us seeing things as separate from Krishna. But because Krishna is all good, then even that energy is still good. It's perfect for its purpose. It's there to teach us a lesson. It's there to temporarily bind us in this material, temporarily allow us to be bound if we want to be bound in this material world. So even that energy is good. It's Krishna's material energy called Maya. So this is precisely the point of this verse, and what Srila Prabhupada is saying here, is that the devotee of the Lord understands that all these activities of karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti are ultimately aimed, all auspicious activities, karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're ultimately aimed at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all of these activities are aimed to simply make us once again see the connection between everything in this world and Krishna. So to see everything in relationship with Krishna. That's the ultimate goal of all these activities, to not see anything. Bhagavatam actually says this, that any feeling of duality or separateness is bondage. That's why we're here. To see anything as separate from the Lord, that's our fundamental problem. That's the fundamental human problem, you could say. And all these activities are simply meant to make us see everything in relation with the Lord. And this is why Srila Rupa Goswami, he said that the ultimate rule and the ultimate regulation, he says, is to always remember Krishna and to never forget him. So ultimately, all the rules and regulations are meant for this rule and regulation, that whatever we see, we remember the Lord, because we see everything in a connection with Krishna. And there's no point in time when we see anything or think about something as separate from Krishna. So karma, jnana, yoga and bhakti, ultimately they all culminate, Prabhupada is saying, in bhakti yoga. And bhakti yoga is, Krishna says in the Gita what it is, manmana bhavamad bhakto, it's remembering the Lord. It's seeing the Lord in everything. It's seeing the connection of everything in the Lord and engaging everything in the Lord's service. So this is all I had to say on this verse. I don't know what we should do. Should we talk about Madhavendra Puri's disappearance, or should we first have a discussion? Or what would you suggest? Have a discussion first. Okay. So yes, please, if there's any comments or questions. Yes, yes, you're right. We also see them as one, but in a different way. We see them as one in nature, in essence, everything is Krishna. We see variety, we see difference. Yeah, we see that duality. Yes. No, that's a good point. I mean, that's a very nice point. That way. The difference. It depends what words we use in English to say that. But that difference is very important. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So we can use the word duality, or we can use the word variety. Whichever we want to say. So there's no duality in the sense that Prabhupada says everything is related to Krishna. It's being used in the service of Krishna. So there's no separateness in mind or in consciousness. But there's there is duality in the sense that, yes, there is variety. Spirit also has color, it has form, it has qualities, and these different qualities manifest in different ways. So that's the thing, we see our acharyas, they all have the same message, but Prabhupada says they word it in different ways. So like Vallabhacharya, he called his philosophy as Shuddha Dvaita, or pure. He said, all of you are Advaitins, or oneness, but we're actually Shuddha Advaitins. We're pure non-dualist. We're pure monist, you know, because we're actually the pure ones. We actually see everything as the Supreme Lord. But then Madhvacharya, he came and he wanted to make this himself so distinct from the Advaitins. He wanted to make this so clear that he called himself Dvaita, that no, we see difference. Now, according to our philosophy, we understand that no, there isn't any absolute difference. There is oneness and difference. And that's why Jiva Goswami's way of describing it was in some ways the ideal way. It was in some ways the very comprehensive way, which is achintya bheda, the way that's oneness and difference, because we understand, well, we don't see complete difference. We also see everything as the energy of the Lord. So in that way, they're one with the Lord. Yes. So there is duality, there is variety, there is difference in the spiritual world, but not duality in the sense of good and bad or Krishna and not Krishna. Yes. Any other points? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Hmm? Yes. Yes. I think. Yeah. Well, this is why the impersonalists are sometimes so tricky, because they're using essentially a false argument to prove a false point. So they say, well, okay, they say, assume that something exists. You say, okay, that's fine. Then they say, assume that something doesn't exist. That's fine. Now, assume that there's something that does not exist and that does not exist. Right? And then, can you slow down here? He said, okay, forget what I'm saying. Just think about the metaphor. The metaphor is of a reflection, right? That the reflection, does it exist? Say, well, sort of. Say, does it not exist? No, it has to exist. That's why, I see it. So a reflection is something that neither exists nor does not exist. So, using the metaphor, they prove their point. But the problem is that the metaphor, they claim that they prove their point. But the problem is that a metaphor is something to, illuminate a point. The metaphor itself cannot be the point. And then based on the metaphor, based on your experience or a metaphor, then you make a point. No, that's a false way of reasoning. It says, no, the point is because the reflection exists, because I can see the reflection, because the reflection is an object of my experience, therefore it exists. So therefore, the reflection truly exists. But then we say, well, but the reflection isn't like the object. I mean, it doesn't seem like it exists. So then the Bhagavatam say, yes, it doesn't exist. It's unreal in the sense that it's temporary. It's very fleeting. You know, reflection only exists for a short period of time, whereas the things in this world that we see exist for a longer period of time. So the Bhagavatam will also call the world as unreal at times, but it'll call it as unreal only in the sense that it's temporary. So if something is, so Maya itself is not unreal, but its manifestations can be called unreal in the sense that they're temporary. So because they're temporary, they have no factual existence. Anything that is, that's why Prabhupada many times, even in conversation, he'll say, all material enjoyment is unreal. Our experience of it is unreal. Why? Because it's not permanent. It has no factual experience. So therefore, we say it's unreal in the sense that it's temporary. But the impersonalists, they'll say, no, I'm making a third ontological category, and that's the ontological category of something which neither exists nor does not exist. It is not existing, nor is it not existing. And so then, once I accept that, then I can prove, then after that, they can very sort of, you could say, logically prove their theory of monism. But so after that, everything seems very logical in impersonalist philosophy. So you read Shankaracharya, if someone did, we don't read, but if someone read Shankaracharya's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, let's say, it actually, this is why so many people get swayed by it, because it seems very logical. It's like everything after that makes sense. But like Srila Prabhupada said, they get the basic equation wrong, but their essential principle, their assumptions are wrong. say, no, we don't want to accept such false logic. For us, something either exists or it doesn't exist. So therefore, our acharyas, they say, everything, even dreams, illusions, our mental anxieties, everything is real. It has to be real, because that's why it can be an object of experience. But we have to understand that it's temporary, so that's why we don't take it very seriously. We don't dwell over it. We don't worry about it too much. So, yes, so that's the impersonalist. Okay, so now we'll just for 10 minutes, we'll read about Shri Madhavendra Puri's disappearance. Today is his disappearance day, so there's many wonderful pastimes in connection with Madhavendra Puri, Shri Madhavendra Puri, but we'll specifically read his disappearance pastime. Because, like all the acharyas, they teach great lessons in their disappearance from the world. So Madhavendra Puri, he taught a great lesson for all of us who are trying to practice Krishna consciousness in his final pastimes. So the place where I'm reading from is Antilila, chapter 8, text 17. 18, text 18. This is the chapter is entitled Ramachandra Puri Criticizes the Lord. Purve yabe Madhavendra Karina Antardhana Ramachandra Puri Tabe Ayala Tanrasthana. Formerly, when Madhavendra Puri was at the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. So, Madhavendra Puri, as you know, he was the first devotee, you could say, the first Vaishnava in our Gaudiya Vaishnava line who brought pure love of Krishna, prema bhakti, to this world. So, we align ourselves with the Madhva Sampradaya, and Madhvacharya is the acharya of this line. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and aligned himself, and the acharyas, they aligned himself with Madhvacharya, because at that time there were essentially two prominent Vaishnava lines. One was of Ramanujacharya, and the other one was of Madhvacharya. And they're very, very powerful. And so there are many reasons why he aligned himself with Madhvacharya. But one of them was because they were the line, the Vaishnava line, who were worshipping Krishna. So Krishna, for the Shri Vaishnavas, even though in terms of philosophy we have almost more in common with their exact tradition, but the Shri Vaishnavas, their ultimate deity was Lord Vishnu, but Madhvacharya was Krishna. So that was one reason. Another reason was because Madhvacharya was the first acharya to write a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So their main text, their main book also was Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our also main book. And a third reason was because Madhvacharya's sole, you could say, sole aim in preaching was to defeat the impersonalists. And this is what he was most glorious in, was most powerful in, was that he literally cleaned out India of impersonalists, where they were actually, Vaishnavism, due to Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, Vaishnavism became so popular in India and among the kings and the great pundits and everything, that the impersonalists would often use Vaishnava texts or Vaishnava acharyas as texts to try to justify their systems. In other words, they actually became in the minority. So this is why we actually Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with Madhvacharya's service of defeating the impersonalists. He was so, he are also, this is why Srila Prabhupada, he's always battling against the Mayavadi philosophers and the impersonalists. He was so pleased by this service that he decided to align himself with this tradition. And so that's why this is, in our tradition, we often find our acharyas having titles like Bharati or even Puri, I think, Puri, that were titles that were given to impersonalist sannyasis. They were the titles of the sannyasis of impersonalists. But, and many of our acharyas like that, but we, it's not necessarily that the case that they took initiation, or you could say that that they were in an impersonalist line. It was just that at that time, there are so many Mayavadi sannyasis being converted to Vaishnavism, that many of them had this title before, you could say, they came in contact with these powerful Vaishnavas. And so once they became Vaishnavas, they kept the title. So you'll find the titles being used here and there. Because so many impersonalists at that time, so many of these different major figures at that time were becoming Vaishnavas. So the line of Madhvacharya goes back all the way back to Madhvacharya, and there's many people in between Madhvacharya and Madhavendra Puri. But Sri Madhavendra Puri, he was the first, you could say, a devotee in our Gaudiya Vaishnava line, because he brought in love for Krishna that was on that spontaneous platform like of Prema Bhakti that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave before that. So worship of Krishna, you could say love towards Krishna was there even before Madhavendra Puri in Madhvacharya's line. But that's Prema Bhakti, that spontaneous love of God on the highest platform in the mood of the gopis, that was bestowed by Madhavendra Puri. So therefore he's very, very significant in our line. He's in that way, he's like the initial sprout of this pure love for God. So on his final, Madhavendra Puri had on his final stage of life, he had two disciples. He had many disciples, but there are two specifically that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions here. One was Ramachandra Puri, and the other was Ishwara Puri. And his disappearance shows the difference between the two disciples. And actually, Ishwara Puri, as we know, his other disciple, who was extremely great devotee of the Lord, he became Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted him as a spiritual master. So here we read about his disappearance pastime. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his spiritual master. "If you are in full transcendental bliss," he said, "you should now remember only Brahman. Why are you crying?" So there's one nice puppet show made on this particular pastime where Ramachandra Puri is coming in and he's trying to instruct his spiritual master, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatman, Shochati Nakangshati, that you are Brahman liberated. Why are you lamenting? Why are you crying? Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal. Oh my Lord Krishna," now this is Madhavendra Puri speaking, he said, "I could not reach you, nor could I reach your abode, Mathura. I am dying in my unhappiness, and now this rascal has come to give me more pain. Don't show me your face. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life." And then Madhavendra Puri, he says a verse that was very dear to Lord Chaitanya, that was repeated again and again by Lord Chaitanya. Krishna napainu muni maron apanara dukhe mori brahma upadesha. This isn't the verse, I think the verse comes later. Yeah. Yes. That verse comes later. I am dying without achieving the shelter of Krishna, and therefore I am greatly unhappy. Now this condemned foolish rascal has come to instruct me about Brahman. Ramachandra Puri was thus denounced by Madhavendra Puri. Due to his offense, gradually material desire appeared within him. One who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus he is situated in criticism. Ishvara Puri Goshaye Kareshi Pada Isevana Svahaste Karena Mala Mutradi Marjana. Ishvara Puri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, performed service to Madhavendra Puri, cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. So Prabhupada in the purport, he describes how this was the difference between Ramachandra Puri and Ishvara Puri. That he said Ramachandra Puri, he wanted to know things. He wanted to know a lot without engaging in devotional service. And so therefore he was a speculator. He became attached to speculation. And then became an offender. Whereas Ishvara Puri, he wanted to serve. He wanted to perform devotional service and through service realize the Lord and know things. Ishvara Puri was always chanting the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna for Madhavendra Puri to hear. In this way, he helped Madhavendra Puri remember the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna at the time of death. Pleased with Ishvara Puri, Madhavendra Puri embraced him and gave him the benediction that he would be a great devotee and lover of Krishna. Thus, Ishvara Puri became like an ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna, whereas Ramachandra Puri became a dry speculator and a critic of everyone else. So Prabhupada describes how what this was showing, the two disciples and what they attained, was that the disciple should never try to instruct the spiritual master. That's one thing. And the other thing is also that in general, we should not try to minimize the position or the importance of the acharya or the spiritual master or of the great souls. That if we think, well, they're great, no doubt they're great, but they're this great, you know, we can put them in a certain box, or we try to minimize their importance, their value, their greatness, their exaltedness, then that becomes a very great offense towards the Lord. And it was due to this offense that Ramachandra Puri fell down. And this offense is like a disease. It's just like we make one mistake and we contract some disease. Right? So in the same way, this is such a serious mistake that it acts like a disease and one loses one's spiritual life. Ishvara Puri received the blessings of Madhavendra Puri, whereas Ramachandra Puri received a rebuke from him. Therefore, these two persons, Ishvara Puri and Ramachandra Puri, are examples of the objects of a great personality's benediction and punishment. Madhavendra Puri instructed the entire world by presenting these two examples. His divine grace, Madhavendra Puri, the spiritual master of the entire world, thus distributed ecstatic love for Krishna. While passing away from the material world, he chanted the following verse. Ai dina dayartha natha he maturanatha kadava lokyase hridayam tvad aloka kataram daita brahmyatikim karomyaham. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? In this verse, Madhavendra Puri instructs how to achieve ecstatic love for Krishna by feeling separation from Krishna. By feeling separation from Krishna, one becomes spiritually situated. Madhavendra Puri sowed the seed of ecstatic love for Krishna within this material world and then departed. That seed later became a great tree in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have incidentally described the passing away of Madhavendra Puri. Anyone who hears this must be considered very fortunate. So one thing, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took so many things from our different acharyas. From the Ramanujacharya's sampradaya, he took service to devotees. He applied that from Madhvacharya's sampradaya. He did worship. He established the principle of worship of the deity. From Vallabhacharya's sampradaya, he established the sentiment of dependence on Krishna and spontaneous devotion. And in the Nimarka sampradaya, they have worship of Radha and Krishna. So the worship in the love of the mood of the gopis is present there in that sampradaya as well. But the specific, you could say, gift of this sampradaya, what you could say is not present in any other sampradayas, and what you could say Lord Chaitanya and Madhavendra Puri gave, is love in separation. And that's what's what we see in this final verse of Madhavendra Puri, that even in the Nimarka sampradaya, they worship Radha and Krishna, but they always see Radha and Krishna in union. It's Radha and Krishna together. But our acharyas, and like Srila Prabhupada is saying here, they emphasize of achieving ecstatic love for Krishna through the feeling of separation, and that the highest form of love, the highest attainment, is love and separation. So that was what Madhavendra Puri was giving in these verses and in his preaching. So, Shri Madhavendra Puri ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, go Praman.